Today, Europe's third wave. And as EU leaders meet over video today, ongoing tensions between Britain and the EU over vaccine rollouts. Europe is now in the grip of a third wave of COVID-19 infections, driven by what it calls the British variant. And it's been struggling with a shortage of vaccine supply and a rollout that has been at times agonisingly slow. Frustration has been boiling over across the continent, with EU leaders singling out the UK for criticism and threatening an export ban on countries that already have high vaccination rates. Such a move would plunge post-Brexit relations between the EU and the UK to a new low. But last night, both sides appeared to pull back from the brink, promising to work together to try to achieve a win-win situation. From The Guardian, I'm Anoushka Astana. Today in Focus, Europe's third wave and an attempt to resolve a bitter dispute over vaccines. John Henley, as Europe correspondent at The Guardian, you've obviously been watching the third wave take hold across the continent. How fast is COVID-19 spreading right now?
It's spreading pretty fast. I mean, across the continent as a whole, according to the World Health Organization, the number of cases was up 12% last week.
Horrible sense of deja vu here in Europe that France's President Macron is describing as Europe's third wave.
There are some countries where the number of new infections is up by 30%, even 40%.
France's hospitals already under pressure. Intensive care patients in Paris relocated to other regions.
In Poland, the number of new cases has quadrupled.
In Germany, they are seeing the numbers of infections rising after they eased restrictions.
It is surging again. I mean, you can certainly say that.
And to some extent, nowhere has surged before now as badly as it surged here in the UK in January, driven, of course, by what we call the Kent variant, but I understand it has a different name across the continent.
It's pretty much universally known as the British variant, I'm afraid, on the continent, or le variant britannique in French. Yeah, it's entirely down to that, in fact. I mean, officially, of course, it's the B117. That accounts now, the latest figures in the Paris region is 87.7% of new cases are now currently the British variant. Angela Merkel just the other day spoke about the start of a whole new pandemic. She called it very serious, and she said it was exclusively down to the British variant. Polish health minister, when he announced new restrictions, said the same kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, it's, as we know, it's at least sort of 55-60% more contagious than the original strain, and some scientists also think it's more, it's deadlier. And so, yes, it's a big deal. And essentially, the continent is now going through, about 2 or 3 months after the UK, yeah, exactly what the UK went through in December, January.
And what restrictions have governments been putting in place to reduce that risk?
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, in terms of looking forward, Easter has sort of basically been cancelled on the continent. Germany has reversed a kind of gradual easing up that they started back in February. 16 départements in France are into a new kind of a lockdown light, really. All that's really changed in France is that sort of non-essential shops have closed. Poland just this week closed all schools and all sports venues. Yeah, across the continent, countries are tightening up.
I mean, everyone saw what was happening in the UK back in January when it was kind of taken by surprise by the speed of spread. To some extent, it's just like what happened last year when we saw it happening in Italy. Have countries reacted too slowly?
I mean, whether they could have acted earlier is a really interesting question, in fact, because it doesn't seem to have made that much difference to the speed with which the new variant is spreading. You know, I mean, cases are soaring pretty much everywhere, more or less, whatever steps countries have taken. I think it's clear that, you know, they shouldn't have eased those lockdowns. The World Health Organization, WHO, has said quite plainly that some countries, its words were, missed an open goal by starting to reopen too soon. I mean, clearly, you know, some governments really felt that they had to give people a bit of hope, a bit of a glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel. And it does seem to be the case that infections have surged. Even if countries went ahead just with very cautious, very minor easings or restrictions.
Okay, so that's the rate at which COVID is spreading, and it's really worrying. The flip side of this race, if you like, is the speed of vaccine rollouts. Why has the EU so far been slower than other countries like the US, like the UK, where we've seen how impressive the NHS can be at managing mass vaccination programmes? Why haven't they been faster?
I think you need to start from the very beginning, which is to say that it would have been unimaginable for the EU not to purchase vaccines collectively, not to embark on a kind of, you know, collective procurement scheme. But it would have dealt it a really huge blow if the big rich countries in the EU, you know, the sort of Frances and Germanys, and to a lesser extent, you know, the Netherlands, Sweden, those kind of places had hoovered up all the vaccines, and, you know, countries like Croatia and Greece and Portugal were left scrabbling. And every EU nation agreed that that was important. But having made that observation, it's obviously clear that 27 countries are going to take longer to get their act together than one. And that was indeed the case. It's also the case that, you know, health has never been a European competence, an EU competence. That's always been down to national governments. So there's very little experience within the Commission. And, you know, the Commission, I think, treated this whole purchasing operation a bit too much like a kind of a trade negotiation, and not so much like, you know, we need to step on this now and secure these vaccines and just hoover up as much as we possibly can. And it doesn't really matter what it costs. We're just going to throw everything at it. That really didn't happen.
Okay, so let's talk about specific vaccines. I suspect we're going to want to pause on AstraZeneca a bit. But before we do, the EU clearly has other options. How quickly is it rolling out Moderna, Janssen and Pfizer, which of course is partnered with the German company BioNTech?
Yes, I mean, the answer is it's picking up quite sharply now. The Pfizer-BioNTech, the big issue with that particular vaccine is that it needs to be kept very, very cold, sort of minus 70 degrees centigrade. And so that simply created logistical issues. But, you know, those logistical chains should now be in place and to function. And in most countries, they are. And yeah, there are now, I mean, there should be 300 million doses of Pfizer and Moderna and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is a single dose vaccine, arriving over the next couple of months.
Okay, so it's really starting to get big numbers in those areas. But more contentious than any of them has, of course, been the deal that the EU signed with AstraZeneca.
Well, the European Union is demanding answers over the millions of undelivered doses of the coronavirus vaccine that it ordered.
Commissioner Ursula von der Leyen has urged pharma company AstraZeneca to stick by its commitments to supply the EU with its COVID-19 vaccine.
Remind me of the origins of that dispute.
Yes, that really is the nub of the question. I mean, I think, again, we need to start at the beginning, which is that the British government invested heavily in Oxford in the development of the vaccine. And it signed a development deal with the University of Oxford, which basically said, we will give you shed loads of money, but we expect this vaccine, use of this vaccine, to be prioritised within the UK. Oxford then partnered with AstraZeneca Shortly after that, when the final contracts were being finalized with the EU, AstraZeneca contracted to supply about 90 million doses in the first quarter of this year, so January, February, March, and 180 million in the second quarter. AstraZeneca then had production difficulties and announced that it would be able to deliver only about a third of its first quarter commitment to the EU, and then subsequently also only about a third of its second quarter commitment to the EU. And the EU basically feels that AstraZeneca has sold the same doses twice, a bit like you being sort of, you know, double booked on a plane or airlines overbooking or whatever, and is upset at the fact that vaccines produced in the EU have been exported to 33 countries for a total of 41 million doses so far, including 10 million doses to the UK, which means that, you know, if the a little bit earlier this month when the UK announced that it had vaccinated 20 million people, you know, that meant, broadly speaking, that roughly half of the doses that allowed that extraordinary achievement to happen had come from the European Union. And it's as Ursula von der Leyen said earlier this month, you know, it's quite hard to explain to Europeans that vaccines that are made in the EU are being exported en masse elsewhere, particularly to the UK, when AstraZeneca has said, we can't supply you with anything like the number of doses that we promised you. From Britain's perspective, of course, it's rather a different story. You know, the British government believes that it acted more like an investor than a kind of a customer, and therefore it's entitled to those doses. It's also reacted very fiercely when Charles Michel and other kind of EU, senior EU figures suggested that Britain might have actually put a vaccine export ban in place. And it's pointed out that, you know, there is no vaccine export ban. But what the Europeans say is that there is a sort of a de facto vaccine export ban, because this contract that the UK signed with AstraZeneca basically prevents AstraZeneca from exporting any doses, particularly to the continent, until Britain is fully vaccinated.
To some extent, it's obvious why Britain really cares about AstraZeneca. It's the absolute heart of its entire rollout. But you've just told me that, you know, there are loads of other vaccines coming in to the EU. Why were they so worried about this? How badly did they think it might affect their rollouts?
Well, I mean, you're talking quite large numbers still. So they were supposed to deliver 90 million doses in the first quarter. That's January, February, March. They're actually going to deliver more like 30 million. So that's a shortfall of 60 million doses. That's enough to give one dose each to the entire population of France. But I think mainly the EU was upset simply because it seems unfair. It's a problem that the EU has with AstraZeneca rather than with the UK. AstraZeneca is simply not delivering, and is not delivering anywhere near on what it said it would deliver to the EU, while it is continuing to deliver in full to the UK. So the EU simply feels we've been shafted, really. I mean, AstraZeneca's response is that, well, what the CEO has said is that the UK put up the development money, and this clause in the UK contract gives priority to British deliveries.
So that's the backdrop, which is already quite bitter. And then in the middle of all that anger about the contracts, questions started to be raised about safety. So first, the German regulator did not approve the vaccine for over 65s, then nor did the French. They felt that even though results looked positive among older recipients, there wasn't enough data. But the language around that did get quite political. President Macron actually said the vaccine was quasi-ineffective for that age group. And then last week,
some countries in Europe are putting a pause on the AstraZeneca shot.
Multiple reports of individuals who are dealing with severe blood clotting who all took the AstraZeneca vaccine.
Now, first Denmark and then countries all across Europe, including Ireland, France, Spain, Italy, temporarily suspended all AstraZeneca vaccinations. What happened?
Right. Well, what happened was that there were concerns about, sort of general concerns about potential blood clots in some recipients of the AstraZeneca vaccine. What was more concerning, particularly in Germany, in Norway, and in Denmark, was a very small number of cases. I mean, a handful of cases of a very rare brain blood clot disorder. And health authorities in these countries started highlighting a small number of these cases. I mean, probably no more than a dozen of these cases. Several people did die. And since then, both the German and the Norwegian expert panels, expert bodies, have said that they do believe there is a link between the vaccine and these very, very rare events. Now, you know, the problem is that, and this is where I think we get into a real sort of cultural difference, which is this the precautionary principle.
This is a principle particularly popular in continental Europe, where there is an inhibition to take any risks.
The UK very much operates on a kind of benefit risk analysis. In other words, you look at what the overall benefit is in the middle of a pandemic, and you see that the risk is actually minimal. You investigate, but you keep going, in this instance, with the vaccination program. On the continent, the principle of precaution rules. But so anyway, these countries paused delivery of the AstraZeneca for about 3 days, most of them. The European Medicines Agency, the European regulator, then came out with its verdict. And vaccinations resumed. However, not everywhere. The Scandinavian countries, Denmark and Sweden and Finland, all said they needed to investigate further. And they needed to sort of check this out and get to the bottom of it. I think that we are talking about a genuine cultural difference here.
Obviously, it's understandable that Europe follows the precautionary principle, that if there is a worry, they pause to make sure it's safe. But at a time that COVID-19 is posing such a huge threat to all of our populations, surely that has to be balanced up with the risk of those actions as well, and the potential danger around the way these things are communicated, especially given the blood clot risk of COVID itself.
So the precautionary principle is what rules on the continent. The difficulty is that it only really works if the consequences of not taking the action are kind of neutral, which is not the case when you're in the middle of a pandemic. And I think it is inevitably the case that there will be deaths because of this suspension of the AstraZeneca vaccine. On the other hand, certainly in Germany, the health ministry was absolutely clear and very explicit that it had no option but to follow the recommendation of its health agency. It said it had a duty of care to everybody to whom it was offering a vaccine, and that if it could not guarantee that that vaccine was completely safe for each individual, it would be laying itself open to legal action. So that's why it took that step. You can argue about the rights and wrongs of it. And certainly, a lot of healthcare professionals threw up their hands in horror.
What do you think about the decision by the French authorities to suspend the AstraZeneca vaccine?
They are fool.
And said, you just need to look at the data. And obviously, the benefit-risk ratio is massively in favour of continuing with the vaccinations. But it is a reality, whether you consider it right or wrong, it is a reality that governments feel that they need to follow this precautionary principle.
And a reality that, of course, has already had consequences. So this week we had a new study from America, from AstraZeneca, suggesting that the vaccine is 79% effective at stopping people getting COVID and perhaps even 100% effective at eliminating the risk of severe disease, although that itself has already led to some controversy because US officials said the study might have relied on outdated information. Nevertheless, it appears to be quite an effective vaccine, but there is hesitancy figures across Europe, according to polling, but are extremely worrying and have risen through all of this. A YouGov poll had 61% of people in France thinking that the AstraZeneca vaccine is unsafe, 55% in Germany, and worrying numbers in Italy and Spain as well. There are real fears about it. How worried should we be about that?
I think we need to take these numbers with a little bit of, we need to be a little bit cautious about them. Firstly, because that YouGov survey, the polling was actually done right in the middle of the suspension. So it didn't measure people's views after the EMA declared the vaccine to be both safe and effective. But secondly, there's a very big difference between clicking on a box on your screen to answer a question from an internet pollster and saying, I'm not sure about this vaccine, I think it might be safe. There's a very big difference between that and actually actively refusing a shot which you know will make a concrete difference and a very significant concrete difference to your quality of life. I mean, we had the Guardian, our reporter in Berlin went down to the big Berlin vaccination center in Tempelhof and spoke to people being given the AstraZeneca vaccine, all of whom were desperate for it. And there were reports in the French media over the weekend of French vaccination centers where people were saying exactly the same thing. And I think we really need to wait, rather than getting alarmed about opinion polls, we really need to wait until we actually get concrete data on the actual take-up. And I think that it is quite possible that this three-day suspension, government saying, we're going to stand back, we're going to stop, we're going to have a proper look, and we will come up with a scientific conclusion and make our recommendation, it might actually have reassured people.
Coming up, if the EU did decide to block vaccine exports, what would it mean for Britain's rollout and for the EU's? John, there's all of that that we've just discussed, but let's go back to where we began, the problem with the contracts. Where are we now with that?
Well, for quite a few days, the EU looked like it could be getting ready to really single Britain out for failing to export vaccines. On Wednesday, it revised what's called its export authorization mechanism, which means that officials can now actually prohibit shipments to countries where either a large percentage of the population has already been vaccinated, or countries that restrict exports through their law or through the contracts that they've signed with their suppliers. And as we've just seen, you know, both of those criteria could apply to the UK. Valdis Dombrovskis, who's the Commission Vice President, said that the EU wanted to see reciprocity and proportionality. Those were the two key issues. He said that, you know, this move wasn't addressed to any particular country, but the EU needed to ensure vaccination of its own population, he said, because it was a real global pandemic hotspot with this third wave underway. But also, it was the only major OECD country that was still exporting vaccines in big numbers. Now, that, you know, there were quite a few countries, two or three, Ireland, the Netherlands particularly, who really didn't like this idea of halting exports. But the political pressure was mounting, really piling up, and to such an extent that, you know, none of them are likely to object at today's council meeting to these new rules being adopted. There's really a lot of resentment out there at what countries see as the UK complaining about EU vaccine nationalism on the one hand, but actually behaving itself in a quite kind of nationalistic protectionist way, as they see it, on the other. So things were kind of quite heating up. And basically, the EU has given itself the tools, you know, and now has a framework within which it can take concrete action. So the key question is, you know, what is this actually going to mean concretely? What action will it take? Well, what it seemed to be boiling down to was that the EU might block the export to the UK of an unknown number of doses that are currently being made at an AstraZeneca plant in Leiden, the Helix plant in Leiden, in the Netherlands. But there were always hopes that what seems to have been an offer that's been put on the table, allegedly, by the UK, to split the vaccines that are being made in that plant in the Netherlands with the EU, there were hopes that that might allow some kind of compromise compromise and avert an all-out EU ban, which really would have been quite kind of catastrophic for EU-UK relations. And late last night, it did indeed seem that kind of some kind of progress might be being made in that direction. The two sides ended up issuing a joint statement in which they said that they were discussing a reciprocally beneficial relationship and working on specific steps to find a solution and expand vaccine supply for all their citizens. They said they were going to be continuing their discussions. So an outright ban seems unlikely today, at least for the time being, the worst seems to have been avoided.
And beyond all of that is the third wave itself, which is taking hold across Europe. Obviously, there's been focus on the fact that it means summer holidays are unlikely. But what really matters is the health impact it's having. Boris Johnson has talked about this wave washing back up on Britain's shores. Although, given that we've already had a surge from the British variant B117, that would be most likely only if there are new variants. What's really worrying is the rate of spread right now across the continent. How bad is this likely to become? And what do the next few months look like?
It's almost impossible to tell at this stage. What is clear is that, you know, vaccination programs will make a difference. And if, as the EU hopes, it gets 70% of its population vaccinated by kind of midsummer, you know, then that really should make a difference. Again, whether or not it'll succeed is anybody's guess. I'm no expert in these things, but I think we are, you know, we've got a glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel, but we're really not there yet.
John Henley, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Europe correspondent John Henley. In response to claims from EU officials that AstraZeneca had double booked its vaccine supplies, the company has said it is sticking by all its contractual commitments. Do follow John's reporting on all of this, as well as our Brussels bureau chief, Daniel Boffey, who will be writing about today's meeting via video between all the EU leaders. That's it from us today. This episode was produced by Alex Atack. Sound design was by Axel Cucoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.